This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review, and it's Wednesday, April 17th. We'll start with the front page. From Brendan Moore in Decatur, bringing it down. Council approves nearly $1.7 million for demo of two derelict school buildings. A $1.7 million demolition project is set to take down the former Durfee School, 1222 East Grand Avenue, and the former Kopenbarger School, 1500 East Condit Street. Two more derelict former school buildings will soon meet the wrecking ball on the taxpayers' dime. The Decatur City Council on Monday unanimously approved a nearly $1.7 million contract with Villa Grove-based Easel Excavating for the demolition of the former Durfee School at Jasper Street and Grand Avenue and Centennial Kopenbarger School at 1500 East Condit Street. The former is owned by Faith Fellowship Christian Church and the latter by the city, which purchased it for $813 at a tax auction last year after its previous owner failed to pay 3 years of property taxes. Demolitions are not uncommon in the city's urban core, where several neighborhoods have become blighted as a result of properties falling into disrepair due to, among other factors, neglect from their private, often out-of-town owners. There were, in fact, more than 100 structures demolished by the city in 2023, with many of them leveled for less than the $20,000 threshold to trigger the need for city council approval. But these two are the latest in a stretch of large asbestos-ridden structures where demolition costs have carried a much larger price tag, leading to frustration and a search among city staff and council members for solutions to hold building owners more accountable. "We're an old town," said Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. "We've got old buildings, old factories, old warehouses. Where does it end? I mean, why are the taxpayers of Decatur stuck with every stinking one of these?" "This is wrong," she said. "It is wrong for a church to assume a building it can't manage and then stick it to us. It's wrong." Council members were equally frustrated with the predicament they were in, acknowledging that the buildings, now considered dangerous public hazards, dragging down surrounding property values, while holding back neighborhood revitalization, had to come down. But they lamented that the city is once again figuratively holding the bag. "So I think we have no option, in my opinion, to proceed tonight with the bid and bring these down," said Councilman Dennis Cooper. "But we've got to find another way to hold owners liable on the onset when they're purchasing these properties." Wayne Dunning, pastor of Faith Fellowship, told Herald and Review earlier this week that the small congregation did not have the funds to bring the structure up to code. They moved to a smaller building at 2700 East Ferry Street Parkway in 2020. "The building is old and it's waving the white flag," Dunning said of the old school building in 2020, according to Herald and Review archives. He said the building, which the church had purchased from the school district for $1,000, always presented a challenge due to its large size. On Monday, Dunning said that the church had been trying to sell their old building for some time, but the three or four nibbles they had never came through. About 6 weeks ago, the church and city came to an agreement, paving the way for its demolition. City Manager Scott Wrighton said the votes were difficult pills to swallow, but that no one else is going to take care of these properties. The vote came just 2 weeks after the council approved a nearly $250,000 contract for asbestos abatement of a pair of privately owned buildings that used to house the YWCA at the southeast corner of North Main and El Dorado. The city will eventually be on the hook for demolition costs associated with that building, which has been vacant and in a state of disrepair for decades. And last year, nearly $1 million was spent on the abatement and demolition of the former Woodrow Wilson Junior High School building, 1140 West Sunset Avenue, with the city splitting the cost with and eventually deeding the land to Decatur Public Schools. City officials say they pursue all legal remedies to compel property owners to pay up to repair or demolish their structures. This includes taking them to court after a demolition to recover the costs associated, or at least the difference between cleanup costs and the property's value. However, with property owners often without the means to pay up, or the properties owned by limited liability companies with no other assets, the city is often left with only the land. Deputy City Manager John Kinseth told the council that the former Durfee site, located along the Jasper Street coordinator, could fetch $250,000, far less than the more than $800,000 price tag of demolition. The Centennial Koppenberger, on the other hand, probably has no commercial value, Kinsa said. Some steps have been taken recently to prevent the degradation of old school buildings, with the Decatur Public Schools implementing a policy of either tearing down its former buildings or selling them to owners that post bonds to ensure that demolition costs are covered if later found necessary. And in February, the council approved an ordinance requiring banks to register properties placed into foreclosure, while property owners of buildings where there's evidence of derelict vacancy, overgrown weeds, disconnected utilities, accumulation of trash, for example, would also have to register. But Wrighton said the city could find other ways to be more aggressive with code enforcement earlier, such as by requiring city businesses to obtain a general business license. This would allow more regular inspections of commercial buildings. Still, there will likely be more demolitions of this ilk in the future than not, as the city seeks to keep up with the spread of blight through the urban core. Kinsa said, these should be the last two school buildings the city will have to demolish for some time, but there are likely a number of larger industrial and commercial buildings that will need to come down in the next few years. The only other school building in question is the former Garfield School, 1077 West Grand Avenue, which the city is seeking to rehabilitate, expand, and convert into 63 affordable apartments for people 55 and over who are living independently. If that plan, which is contingent on receiving state tax credits, does not come to fruition, the city and school district have an intergovernmental agreement in place that would have them split the costs of demolition. The city-owned property would then be transferred back to the school district. Some of the funds to cover the demolitions will come from the city's special projects reserve, which is about a $2 billion pot of excess cash that was previously earmarked for economic development incentives. Though the council voted 6-1 to amend the ordinance to maximize the use of remaining federal American Rescue plans for the expense, the city has budgeted about $3 million ARPA funds for demolitions this year. The goal was to complete about 200 mostly residential demolitions this year. However, a significant diversion of ARPA funds for those two large demos could come at the expense of others, with Kinsa saying that essentially, at some point later in the year, we will have to stop the residential demolitions. Wrighton, however, said that there is some room to accommodate the council's request. The lone vote against using ARPA funds was Councilman David Horn, calling the potential movement of dollars away from other demos outrageous. In other news, the council authorized the issuance of nearly $37 million in bonds for water infrastructure projects. This would include what is essentially a refinancing of $31.5 million worth of bonds issued in 2014 and 15, as well as the issuance of 5.3 million new bonds for work at the South Water Treatment Plant. Wrighton said lower interest rates make now the time to refinance those earlier bonds, estimating that the city could save between $1.2 million and $1.8 million in interest in doing so. The council also approved two agreements with Decatur-based G&H Marine. A $122,000 contract to install a fully roofed boat dock with four boat slips and lifts for use by the city of Decatur. It will replace the existing Lake Services dock, which is 16 years old, and according to the city, reached the end of its useful life. A fuel system lease that will allow G&H to operate and maintain the city's fuel system at the Nelson Park Marina. In addition to taking over gas sales, the Decatur-based dock builder put the convenience store inside the marina building, which the city has leased from the park district since 1934. The council voted earlier this year to grant the company a liquor license allowing for on-premise sales. Valerie Wells contributed to this report. Continuing now with local news from page A3. Donette Beckett, Decatur, Barb Blakely retiring after 3 decades at Dove Incorporated. Barb Blakely found it the right time to retire and took it. This is just a transition, said Blakely. The chief communication officer at Dove Incorporated, This is a good time to get some other creative people get busy. Blakey is retiring from Dove after more than 30 years. Her last day will be Thursday, April 18th. During her tenure, Blakey has overseen the agency's community services, volunteerism, and communication efforts, as well as its retired and senior volunteer program and beginning awareness basic education studies programs. Before things get really crazy here in the fall, someone else can get on board, she said. Blakey was often one of the faces representing Dove during various events. When someone's here for 31 years, they take on a lot of responsibilities, said Darsonia Switzer, Dove CEO. But we have a really good staff that can absorb some of the responsibilities that Barb has had to take on throughout the years. Who will fill the position will be announced soon. Dove has provided resources and education in the homeless and domestic violence community for more than 50 years. Roles have changed throughout the years, Switzer said. We would love to bring another Barb on board, she said about Blakey's history with the agency. We're going to try to do the best by her absence and vacancy and taking on some of the roles and responsibilities that she has. Previous executive director Tammy Wilcox worked with Blakey for 25 years. Barb kept Dove on track with its core mission, she said. Wilcox was the financial director before taking the position as executive director. Over the years, I leaned on her to keep us on track and our vision focused on what we should be doing, she said about Blakey. I always liked her volunteerism-minded programming and the community services because that's why Dove was founded. Filling Blakey's position will be difficult, Switzer said. She is a huge reason why Dove's reputation in the community is as stellar as it is, Switzer said. She has helped mold and grow the organization. Switzer has invited Blakey back to future Dove events. Doors are always open, Switzer said. We'll continue to keep her involved as much as she wants to. However, Blakey said she is ready to move on. Things change, they move forward, Blakey said, and that's good. Think Well Makerspace hosting open house, Decatur. The public is invited to attend an open house Wednesday, April 17th at Think Well Makerspace Innovations, the community's newest creativity incubator. Located at 120 North Franklin Street in the upper level of the Decatur Public Library building, Makerspace is a collaborative environment where individuals share tools, technologies, and expertise with other makers. The open house runs from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. with a reception, activities, and tours beginning at 4:30 p.m. The event will serve as an ideal opportunity to see what the facility has to offer those who are looking to take a hobby or interest to the next level. Shelbyville Soldier to receive a new home. The public is invited to the home of Army PFC Aaron Teufel as he receives a new house donated by the national nonprofit organization Homes for Our Troops. The event will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 20th at 1775 East Road, Shelbyville. Teufel was severely injured August 23, 2007, while serving in Iraq during his first combat deployment. His vehicle was struck by an improvised explosive device. He has had multiple surgeries and a long recovery after he returned to the United States. The new home features more than 40 special adaptations and will provide mobility and safety characteristics. Homes for Our Troops has donated the home through contributions from donors, supporters, and corporate partners. For more about Homes for Our Troops donations, visit www.hfotusa.org. Rock Springs Center goes batty for Bat Appreciation Day from Decatur. Rock Springs Nature Center will celebrate Bat Appreciation Day on Saturday, April 20th, with an educational presentation from 7 to 8 p.m. The Going Batty program will teach about local bat species, their habits, and what makes them special, and will conclude with a trip outdoors to look for and try to identify native bats with a bat sonar system. Register online at maconcountyconservation.org. Cost is $5 per person. From Valerie Wells in Decatur, Richland-Millikan Reach Transfer Agreement. Richland Community College and Millikan University have reached a transfer agreement to allow Richland students to seamlessly transfer to Millikan to complete their bachelor's degrees. Richland students who wish to transfer to Millikan will receive a plan of study for their time at Richland, along with automatic acceptance to Millikan, upon completion of an associate degree in arts, science, fine arts, or engineering science. Students can then complete their bachelor's degree after transfer to Millikan in 2 years. The students must have a minimum of a 2.0 grade point average. The partnership is effective beginning with the 24-25 academic year. Students will still have to meet specific core requirements and criteria to enter certain programs. Along with this, Richland graduates that have successfully completed the requirements of the Honors Opportunities Program will be automatically accepted into Millikan's James Millikan Honors Scholars Program. We are proud to partner with Millikan to provide Richland students a direct pathway to pursue their bachelor's degree. This collaboration embodies community, showing that when institutions unite, we can create a bridge to degree completion for every student choosing a four-year path. Together, we are forging pathways that empower our students to achieve their academic dreams, said Richland President Chris Valdez. An additional agreement will allow students at Millikan who attended Richland without receiving an associate's degree to apply for a reverse transfer, and they will receive credit for courses at both institutions that equal an associate's degree. We are grateful to our partners at Richland for joining us in creating pathways for Richland students to complete their four-year degree at Millikan, said Millikan President Jim Reynolds. Our community is fortunate to have collaborating institutions who see education as transformative and choose to help deserving students with their dreams of better lives for them and their families. Partnerships like this take down barriers to success for all students who wish to continue their education and seek a four-year degree, and we are proud to be of service to those community members. From Scott Perry, Indicator. Police investigating shooting death. The Decatur Police Department is seeking the public's help with an ongoing investigation into the shooting death Monday of a 65-year-old man. According to a news release, officers responded at 6:48 p.m. to a report of a gunshot victim in the 800 block of South Jasper Street. They arrived to find a deceased victim with multiple gunshot wounds. Detectives with the department's Criminal Investigation Division were called in to interview witnesses and process the crime scene. Multiple shell casings were located near the deceased 65-year-old. The release stated the incident isn't considered to be a random act of violence. Anyone with information about this incident or video surveillance footage relevant to the homicide is encouraged to contact the Criminal Investigations Division at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. And now from national and world news, our digest. Mayorkas impeachment article sent to Senate, Washington, D.C. House impeachment managers walked two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas across the Capitol to the Senate on Tuesday, forcing senators to convene a trial on allegations that he willfully and systematically refused to enforce immigration laws. While the Senate is obligated to hold a trial, the proceedings will not begin until Wednesday and may not last long. Democrats are expected to try to dismiss or table the charges before full arguments get underway. Republicans argued there should be a full trial. Majority Democrats said the GOP case against Mayorkas doesn't rise to the high crimes and misdemeanors laid out as a bar for impeachment in the Constitution. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, previously said he wants to address this issue as expeditiously as possible. Venezuela closes embassy over raid, Mexico City. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro ordered the closure of his country's embassy and consulates in Ecuador on Tuesday in solidarity with Mexico in its protest over Ecuadorian authorities' raid on the Mexican embassy in Quito. Venezuela also fully supports Mexico's request to have the United Nations suspend Ecuador from the world body, Maduro said during a virtual meeting of the leaders of the community of Latin American and Caribbean states. Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa ordered the raid April 5th to arrest the country's former vice president, Jorge Glass, a convicted criminal and fugitive who holed up at the embassy. Mexico granted him asylum before the raid. The extraordinarily unusual use of force drew immediate condemnation from governments around the world because diplomatic premises are considered foreign soil and inviolable under treaties. Briefly, fentanyl. China is fueling the fentanyl crisis in the U.S. by directly subsidizing the manufacturing of materials traffickers use to make the drug outside the country, according to a report released Tuesday by a special House committee focused on countering the Chinese government. From the Mideast, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned Tuesday of potential global economic damage from rising tensions in the Middle East and pledged the U.S. and its allies won't hesitate to use sanctions powers to address Iran's malign and destabilizing activity. Student debt. The Education Department filed paperwork Tuesday for a proposed new regulation to deliver the student loan debt cancellation President Joe Biden announced last week. It faces a 30-day public comment period and another review. Ukraine war. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed a controversial law Tuesday to possibly boost conscription to replenish Kyiv's depleted forces to fend off Russia. Transgender ban. An appeals court ruled Tuesday that West Virginia's transgender sports ban violates a teen athlete's rights under Title IX, the federal law that prohibits sex-based discrimination in schools. MyPillow. The U.S. Supreme Court this week declined to consider MyPillow founder and election denier Mike Lindell's challenge to the legality of the FBI seizure of his cell phone. From the Associated Press in New York, first six jurors seated for Trump criminal trial. Choosing a jury could take days, proceedings expected to last weeks. The first six jurors for Donald Trump's hush money trial were chosen Tuesday after lawyers grilled members of the jury pool about their social media posts, political views, and personal lives to decide whether they can sit in fair judgment of the former president. The court began filling out the jury of 12 people along with six alternates who will decide whether to convict Trump of charges accusing him of falsifying business records to cover up a sex scandal during his 2016 presidential campaign. Possible jurors were quizzed for hours about their views on Trump and other issues, and eight were excused after saying they could not be impartial or because they had other commitments. The methodical process could take several more days or even weeks. The trial, which began Monday, puts Trump's legal problems at the center of his closely contested race against President Joe Biden for the White House. It's the first of Trump's four criminal cases to go to trial, and it may be the only one to reach a verdict before voters go to the polls in November. The trial expected to last for 6 weeks or more. From Washington in the Associated Press, Johnson pushes ahead on aid packages for allies. Facing resistance in his party, GOP Speaker will need Democratic support. House Speaker Mike Johnson pushed back Tuesday against mounting Republican anger over his proposed U.S. aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and other allies, and rejected a call to step aside or risk a vote to oust him from office. "I am not resigning," Johnson, Republican Louisiana, said after a testy morning meeting of fellow House Republicans at the Capitol. Johnson referred to himself as a wartime speaker of the House and indicated in his strongest self-defense yet he would press forward with a U.S. national security aid package, a situation that would force him to rely on Democrats to help pass it over objections from his weakened majority. "We are simply here trying to do our jobs," Johnson said, calling the motion to oust him absurd, not helpful. Johnson appeared emboldened by his meeting late last week with Donald Trump, when the Republican former president threw him a political lifeline with a nod of support after their private talk at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. At his own news conference Tuesday, Johnson spoke of the importance of ensuring Trump is reelected to the White House. From Washington, Associated Press, Mark Sherman. Capital riot. Court questions charges. Ruling, expected this summer, could have broad repercussions. The Supreme Court questioned Tuesday whether federal prosecutors went too far in bringing obstruction charges against hundreds of participants in the January 6, 21 Capitol riot. It wasn't clear how the justices would rule in a case that also could affect the prosecution of former President Donald Trump, who faces the same charge for his efforts to overturn his election loss in 2020. The justices heard arguments over the charge of obstruction of an official proceeding in the case of Joseph Fisher, a former Pennsylvania police officer who was indicted for his role in disrupting Congress's certification of Joe Biden's 2020 presidential election win over Trump. Fisher is one of 330 people facing that charge, which stems from a law passed in the aftermath of the Enron financial scandal more than two decades ago to deal with the destruction of documents. A decision is expected by late June. Trump faces two charges in a separate case brought by Special Counsel Jack Smith in Washington that could be knocked out with a favorable ruling from the nation's highest court. Next week, the justices will hear arguments over whether the former president and presumptive nominee for the 24 Republican nomination has absolute immunity from prosecution in that case, a proposition that so far was rejected by two lower courts. Smith argued separately in the immunity case that the obstruction charges against Trump are valid no matter how the court decides Fisher's case. The first former U.S. president under indictment, Trump is on trial on hush money charges in New York and also has been charged with election interference in Georgia and with mishandling classified documents in Florida. It was not clear after more than 90 minutes of arguments where the court would land in Fisher's case. Conservative Justices Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch appeared more likely to side with Fisher, while liberal justices Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor seemed more favorable to the Justice Department's position. Some of the conservative justices said the law was so broad that it could be used against even peaceful protests, and also questioned why the Justice Department has not brought charges under the provision in other violent protests. There have been many violent protests that have interfered with proceedings, Justice Clarence Thomas said. He was back on the bench Tuesday after an unexplained one-day absence. Today's sports trivia question. Who was the first black head coach in the NBA? On this day in sports history, April 17, 1939, Joe Louis knocks out Jack Roper at 220 of the first round in Los Angeles to retain the world heavyweight title. 1947, Jackie Robinson bunts for his first major league hit. 1951, Mickey Mantle makes his major league debut for the New York Yankees. 1976, Mike Schmidt hits four consecutive home runs and drives in eight runs as the Philadelphia Phillies overcome a 13-2 deficit to beat the Cubs 18-16 in 10 innings in Chicago. 1982, the Denver Nuggets, Alex English, Dan Issel, and Kiki Vandeweghe each averaged 20 points a game, the first front court to do so since Bob Pettit, Cliff Hagan, and Clyde Lovellette of St. Louis in 1961. In 1983, Nolan Ryan strikes out his 3,500th batter. 1995, Wayne Gretzky reaches 2,500 career points when he sets up a power play goal by Rob Blake in the Los Angeles Kings' 5-2 loss to the Calgary Flames. In 2001, Barry Bonds becomes the 17th major leaguer to hit 500 home runs. Bonds' eighth inning drive off Terry Adams leads the San Francisco Giants over the Los Angeles Dodgers 3-2. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, April 17th. Please stay tuned.